This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. As you know, April is Autism Awareness Month, and everyone experiences happiness and sorrow, anger, joy, fear, surprise, and loneliness. Kids on the spectrum feel just as deeply, but they often sound different, have more issues with confidence, and they don't know what comes after high, making their ability to focus and succeed in social situations more difficult. Authors Christine Weiss and Dr. Eric Weiss recently released their new book, Educating Marston, to help those that care for a child struggling with these emotions and provide them with a hope for healing. Through umbilical cord stem cell therapy, Chris and Dr. Weiss have made great strides with their own autistic son, Marston, and here today to tell us about the new book and stem cell therapy is Dr. Weiss. And Dr. Weiss, thanks for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
No, thank you.
So Dr. Weiss, with April being Autism Awareness Month, let's start with defining autism for those that aren't familiar. Can you tell us, in your own words, what is autism and why is it sometimes referred to as autism spectrum disorder?
Well, autism, it's a neurodevelopmental disorder that presents early in childhood. And it's characterized by kind of three major symptoms. And the first is impaired social communication, mostly speech. These children have some type of speech issue. It can vary from being nonverbal to a typical speech impediment where they have trouble picking out words. They also have repetitive behaviors where they may stack blocks, they may flap their hands, they may hit themselves. And the third thing is probably impaired social interaction, where they just don't get, emotional and social cues from either adults or children their own age. And the reason why it's a spectrum is because there's a vast array of symptoms. It can be as mild as somebody with just a little bit of ADD that has trouble functioning in the classroom and paying attention and interacting with a teacher, to somebody who is completely nonverbal and bangs their head with their hand. And it's all the same thing, just because it fits those three categories: some type of speech issue, some type of repetitive behavior, and some type of social interaction issue as well.
Certainly some good information to lead things off here today. Now, continuing on, tell us more about the spectrum, if you would.
Well, I think that most people, it's easy to pick out somebody who is severe because those persons have such maladaptive behavior that they're clearly abnormal. Their arms are flapping. They can't speak. They're having a temper tantrum. They just can't function in society. However, as of now, about 1 in 58 of all children born are somewhere on the spectrum. So that's huge. It's about 2% of the population. And so the people that are more mild are just people that just, don't fit in. They have difficulty navigating society. They have difficulty in education and communication. And so that's the breadth of the spectrum is for people you can't really tell to people that are obvious.
I'm sure listeners tuning in would be curious. How does one actually get diagnosed, and at what age is diagnosis possible?
Well, it as you would expect, it really can't be diagnosed at birth because you're waiting for type of social and speech delays. But in the right situation, in the right help, it's now starting to be recognized anywhere from 9 months of age to 24 months of age. There's a woman at Florida State, a doctor, Dr. Amy Weathersby, who's truly an amazing researcher. She's a professor of psychology at FSU, as well as a professor of clinical science. But more importantly, she's the director of the Autism Institute. And she's developed a website called the Autism Navigator. Well, anybody who thinks that they're having a potential issue with their child can log on, and it's www.autismnavigator.com, and it clearly spells out kind of social and speech interactions and behaviors that a normal, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 month, all the way up to 10 years old would have. And then somebody who's on the autistic spectrum might, you know, what they may have. And so you can look at these examples and go, hey, you know, I might have a problem, or, you know, my child is, these are things that have been described in normal kids. But the great thing about it is you can actually upload videos of your children. And one of the researchers there will look at it and then let you know if you have a problem, because the key is early diagnosis, because then you can do early intervention.
Yeah, certainly do appreciate your input on that. That is helpful as well. Now, do the signs and symptoms of autism change over time? And if so, how?
Well, I think the signs and symptoms do change over time, but what doesn't change is the three categories where there's delays: social interaction, speech, and repetitive behavior. So you would suspect that as a nine-month-old who's on the spectrum goes to 2 years of age, they may develop some speech. They may go from nonverbal to 4 or 5 words. They may be able to look at TV for a little bit, but they're clearly different from their peers who are starting to babble and talk and ask questions, and, you know, become toilet trained, things like that. And as time goes on, even though the child with autism may improve, the difference from their peers gets vastly worse. You know, the difference between somebody who's severe compared to a normal nine-year-old when they're nine is much different than if you compare them to a nine-month-old, because you know, it's just somebody's brain is developing and theirs is not developing.
Dr. Weiss, really appreciate your visit with us and the information shared so far today. We're speaking with Dr. Eric Weiss, the founder of Northeast Florida Plastic Surgery Center and the co-author of the new book, Educating Marston. He's joined us here today here on the eHealth Radio's Autism News Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, they say kids on the spectrum feel differently and have more issues with confidence and trouble in social situations, as we mentioned. Is that really true? And tell us a little bit more about that from your perspective.
I think it's definitely true. And it's obviously the kids that are actually better off, the ones that are closer to normal, because they look normal, and in some situations they act normal, but they truly just never fit in. They're always kind of, it's like a glass window, and they're on the other side of it, and they're looking in, and they just can't join the group because they lack the specific social skills to interact normally. And obviously those are the kids that are in school that, you know, might just, people think they're just a little bit weird, they're not normal. And so it can lead to bullying. And as anybody who's raised kids know, a negative experience, you know, leads to more negative experiences, and pretty soon they lose confidence, and they stay away from the situation, and they become less and less social.
Now, you recently released a book with your wife, Christine Weiss, called Educating Marston. Tell us why this book is important to you both and how it is a helpful resource for anyone with an autistic child.
Well, I think the book is very important. And, you know, to be honest, my wife wrote about 18 chapters and I wrote 3. So even though I'm a co-author, I had a smaller part to play. But I think that when a family faces the autism diagnosis, it's very daunting. You know, when your child, if you're told your child has leukemia, let's say, you know, you end up going to the pediatric hospital, you see the pediatric oncologist, and they talk to you about chemotherapy, potential radiation therapy. They can walk you through what's going to happen over the next 3 to 4 to 5 years. When you get a diagnosis of autism, there's no standard game plan. There's no playbook that anybody hands you. And, you know, they just kind of, you know, slap you on the back and say, you know, try to get some therapy, maybe it'll improve over time. And that's because the research and the time hasn't really been invested in it until relatively recently. But this book, you know, I think talks about resilience of the family. It gives hope. It talks about strength and struggles. And it's just a book that I think will buoy the spirits of people who read it. And I think that probably takes a back seat to the most important thing about the book, is that we tried to make it a playbook as much as possible. We tried to talk about our son and what worked and what didn't work. And at the back of every chapter, and even at the end of the book, there's a huge reference section with phone numbers, website, contact information of things that worked and for resources in people's community that they can call and get help with their child.
As you just mentioned, you have an autistic child named Marston. You indicate that stem cell replacement therapy does help. How has it helped Marston, and do you feel it will ultimately be the wave of the future in helping autistic children? Get into some of those details.
Well, it's helped Marston tremendously, and I do believe it'll be the wave of the future. I think that, you know, if I could answer that question by backing up a little bit. And the first thing is, when we talk about stem cells, you know, everybody sometimes gets confused between fetal stem cells and adult stem cells. And we learned a lot about fetal stem cells back in the early 90s when they were potentially aborting some fetuses to harvest their stem cells. And there was a tremendous ethical concern, which in fact I agree with. Several church organizations came out with statement against it. And there was a big debate whether federal tax money should go towards this type of research. However, the stem cells we're talking about are adult stem cells, and more importantly, umbilical cord stem cells. And when a baby is born, they don't have fetal stem cells in their umbilical cord. They have adult stem cells. Because after about midway through the second trimester, the baby really is completely formed. And so you lose the fetal stem cells that are forming organs and different things, and you're just growing. And what's been shown through multiple great scientific experiments and research is that fetal stem cells are designed to grow a baby, and adult stem cells are designed to heal. And so these are the stem cells we're talking about. And so if you look at autism, you know, everybody was trying to figure out what causes autism. You know, was it genetic? You know, did you have some type of genetic abnormality in your chromosomes? Was it environmental? Were you exposed to some type of toxin, either in the womb or right when you get out of the womb? Or is it immunologic? And to hit those three quickly, there are some genes that are correlated with autism, but nothing that stands out that's causative. There's no significant environmental toxin we know. And as we looked at immunologic, there was a great study out of Johns Hopkins where they took 11 people, both children and adults with autism, that died from other causes and looked at their brains, their fresh brains. And everybody had some type of neuroinflammation going on. There was some type of inflammatory process in their brain. And then they took 6 living people with autism, and they took some of the spinal fluid out of their back, and they tested those, and they all had neuroinflammation as well. And when they looked at the microscope, this neuroinflammation closely resembled the same type of neuroinflammation that are kind of the top 5 neurodegenerative disorders of our lifetime. It kind of looked like Alzheimer's disease. It kind of looked like Parkinson's disease. It kind of looked like ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease. It looked like dementia associated with HIV, and it looked like the dementia associated with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So now we have all these neurodegenerative disorders, and we have some type of inflammatory process, you know, that kicked it off. And so the question is, if we knew from other research, especially stroke research and traumatic brain research, is when an inflammatory process starts in the brain, it can be detrimental. And sometimes it can start and not stop. You know, you get hit in the brain, you develop a concussion, and this inflammatory process just keeps going until 20 years later, you know, you have dementia. And so stem cells have been shown to turn off neuroinflammation. that's been shown in different animal studies, in trauma and in stroke. But more importantly, there's an animal model for autism. It's a special type of mouse called the BTBR mouse. And it's inbred, and they have mice talk to each other. Most people don't know that through these kind of low signal vibrations. So these inbred mice that look like autism, they have communication defects. They have cognitive defects. They have repetitive behaviors. And it looks just like autism. And so what they did was they gave these mice stem cells, adult stem cells, and they got better. There's a tremendous experiment where if you breed this mice, that a mouse that has autism and it has babies, and if you take one of the babies away from the mother and just move it 3 or 4 inches over, the mother will just leave it there and nurse the rest of her litter, and that mouse will die. But if you give that mother stem cells, she'll walk over, pick up that mouse, and bring it back and continue nursing it. So what they found out is you can reverse these behaviors and these speech issues in mice with stem cells. And so that probably led to the first major study, and that came out of Duke by researcher and Dr. Jessica Sun and Joanne Kurtzberg. And I'll put a plug in for Duke just because I went there too. So I feel it's kind of the home team. So they took 25 kids with autism that all had banked their own cord blood. Because now when a baby's born, usually the obstetrician will ask you, do you want to save the blood in case you ever need it? Because treating diseases with fetal blood is not new, or blood in general. I mean, the most common is obviously a transfusion. We've been giving people other people's blood since the 1800s. And now there's about 80 diseases that have been shown to be tremendously improved with umbilical cord blood. The most common is childhood leukemia. But so people tend to bank their cord blood. So they took these 25 kids. They gave them a single dose of their own cord blood. And 60% got remarkably better, tremendously better, by multiple different studies. And the improvement was gradual. It peaked at 6 months, but more importantly, it stayed. It didn't go back down. And I think the most important thing of everything is that when they studied these kids, it's been shown that kids with autism have abnormal white matter in their brain, especially in the areas that control speech and social interaction. They have a true structural abnormality. And there's a type of MRI that they did at Duke called a DTI, diffuse tensor imaging, which picks up on that. And they took those kids that got better. You know, they did an MRI before they got their cord blood, and they had the typical abnormality seen in autistic kids. And then they tested them afterwards, after they got better, and all those children had actual structural changes in their brain that move toward normalization. And so for the first time in history, we're starting to develop a true therapeutic intervention for autism that you have objective measurements. You know, there's something called the autism rating scale, and there's the parent index. There's all these things where you just have to kind of eyeball the kid and check the box and come up with a raw score. But now with this new type of MRI, we have the ability to say they had neurons that didn't connect. Now they have neurons connect. Now they're speaking better. And so that has opened the door to tremendous research. And for our listeners, that was a phase one study. And a phase one study is usually, you know, is this stuff safe? And of course, it was found to be safe. A phase two study is this stuff effective? A phase three study is dosage and administration. How much do we give? When do we give it? How much? And the phase four study, is this better than anything else we have? So the amount of research into umbilical cord blood is tremendous. And it's been shown to decrease the amount of heart that dies after a heart attack. It's been shown to decrease the amount of brain that dies after a stroke. And so I think it's going to be a mainstay of treatment in the next 5 years. I think there'll be stem cells that are frozen in every emergency room to be ready to give for a variety of disorders. But I think it is going to be remarkable in the neurodegenerative disorders, because it looks like it can really make a difference in autism and hopefully the other chronic traumatic encephalopathy, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, etc.
Incredible coverage on that, on stem cell replacement therapy for autistic children. I can't thank you enough for really getting into that deeply. And that is a big help for not only myself, but for the listening audience. Much appreciated. Now, taking that a step further, can one actually come to your office for stem cell replacement therapy?
Yeah, we're just starting, actually. Well, actually, previously I've done it. I've done it on many children with very good results. But last year, there were some regulatory issues with the FDA that kind of shut down how stem cells were kind of harvested, packaged, processed, et cetera. And those issues are being worked out now. And so I like the researchers in the processes at a company called LeoQuartz, and they're just coming online. And so I haven't been able to do it for over a year, but I'm going to be up and running probably in the next 2 months, and we'll start doing it again. But it's an amazing process. I think that there'll be from autism to arthritis, people will take this. And it's an interesting thing, because we mentioned stem cell replacement therapy, and that's kind of an old term. Now it's just stem cell therapy, because we always thought that these stem cells would go into your body and become engrafted, become like a transplant, like a kidney transplant or something like that. But what they do is they set up in your body and they read your own body's abnormal chemical signals, and they release these little packets of proteins and RNA and things called exosomes. And then those exosomes travel to the area of inflammation, and it actually makes your body heal itself. So, and the stem cells actually die off after 4 or 5 months, but what they've made continues. And so it actually, they don't become part of you, but they make your body heal itself. It's an amazing process.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. And again, we really appreciate your taking a moment to be with us here today. Lastly, is Educating Marston available for sale, and where can one go to not only purchase the book, but to get more information?
Yeah, it's certainly for sale. It can be found on Amazon. And when you go to Amazon, there's one little bugaboo where it says the paperback is sold out, but the Kindle and the hardback book are not. If you just look for that, you can get it there. But Walmart, Target, Books A Million, it's all for sale on there. And you can go on the website, educatingmarston.com, www.educatingmarston.com, and then you can click on any of those links, and it will take you right to the where you can buy it. Plus, there's more information on there about stem cells, other lectures by me, but more importantly, links to that Autism Navigator. It really things that can help people help their child.
Folks, again, it is educatingmarston.com. Dr. Weiss, all the best. Thanks so much for joining us here today on eHealth Radio, and look forward to our next conversation.
Thank you very much.
And you're certainly more than welcome. We've been speaking with Dr. Eric Weiss, the founder of Northeast Florida Plastic Surgery Center and the co-author of the new book, Educating Marston. And for all the details, visit educatingmarston.com. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.